Thank you, Bill. That was great. Well, good morning, everyone. I will start out by saying that Marie and I have both been sick this week. We don't have COVID, we don't have the flu, but we have some kind of crud that has been destroying my voice all week. So I have my cough drops up here. I have my lemon ginger tea up here. And so if I have to pause and take a drink every once in a while, just bear with me. And I will just give you a cheers and have something. So, with all that said, we are in the third week of a series titled To Know What Love Is, Unlocking the Power of God's Greatest Gift. Now, in the first week, if you were here, Evelyn taught us about the word hesed, the Hebrew word hesed. It means love. It's translated in many different ways throughout the Hebrew Bible. I think it occurs like 250 times in the Hebrew Bible, and 148 of those it's translated as mercy. Now, last week we talked about how we should love others, even our enemies, because we all bear God's image. Evelyn threw some Latin at us, the term imago Dei. When I had to choose language in high school, I had a chance to do Latin and I took French. I've forgotten the French too at this point, but thanks for the lesson in Latin. It was very good. It's close, yeah. So we are exploring today what it means when love is misguided or misdirected. So the title of your sermon that's printed in the bulletin, it might get a song going in your head, maybe, if you're of a certain age. All week. All week. Yeah, because I gave it to her early, so she had it all week. The song Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places. It was released in June 1980. It was originally sung by country artist Johnny Lee and was part of the soundtrack of the movie Urban Cowboy. Now, I'm going way back. So if you were of an age where you remember Urban Cowboy, you will remember that it was a catalyst for this fad of cowboy-themed bars all over the country. The Riding Bulls and people wearing cowboy hats and all of that. That all started from this particular movie. That song has been covered many times. It has even showed up in parodies. It was part of a skit that was by Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live. It was actually even part of a comic strip from Gary Larson, who does The Far Side. He had a version of this song. But the title fits really with the text and what we're going to be talking about today. So let's start out with a couple of definitions. Misdirected love. Think of it as love where it isn't supposed to be or is directed in the wrong place. So an example, and you may be thinking of examples. We had this discussion downstairs. By the way, we have a class Sunday mornings before church. So if you're interested in coming down and joining us, 9:45, 10 o'clock, we get started. We just sit around and chat about lots of things. But we were talking about these definitions today. And the one that I brought up was the term patriotism. So we think of patriotism is a healthy thing. It's something that we should do, a love of country, that we should love our country. We should be proud of where we live. We should be proud of who we are. You know, we think of this as being the melting pot, that we have all of these cultures that come together. We should be proud of that. That's a healthy thing. But what happens is it gets twisted and it gets radicalized and it becomes nationalism. And we kind of see where that is at this point in our world right now. The second one is misordered love. So it's a love of something that changes your priorities and upends a strong foundation of love. This could go in all different kinds of directions. We came up with all kinds of stuff downstairs. You know, the one I would think about is the love of money. So money itself is not evil, but the love of money is evil. And so we see it where that love, that direction of money, takes over everything else in your life. And whatever other priorities or things that you had to love, this takes over. So that becomes an idea of misordered love. So our first text today is from the book of Deuteronomy. We're going back a ways here. Chapter 11, verses 13 through 16. Now, this book was written in the form, in the story, that it is Moses' last will and testament before the Hebrews go into the promised land. And this section that we're looking at is part of a very long sermon that Moses, in the first person, is talking about the first commandment. So we talked about the first commandments back a little while ago. You may remember the first commandment. And one version is in Exodus 20, verse 3. You shall have no other gods before me. So kind of keep that in mind, because we're going to kind of expand on that first one. So let's go to Deuteronomy, verses 11, 13 through 16. And I'm going to read this. This is the Common English Bible that I'll be reading from. Now, if you completely obey God's commandments that I am giving you right now, again, this is first person, so this is written as if Moses is speaking this. Let me start over. Now, if you completely obey God's commands that I am giving you right now, by loving the Lord your God and by serving him with all your heart and with all your being, then he will provide rain for your land at the right time, early rain and late rain, so you can stock up your grain, wine, and oil. He will also make your fields lush for your livestock, and you will eat and will be satisfied. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. So the crux of this text is a call to faithful obedience in response to God's loving grace. So if you're looking at these verses, if you have a Bible and you're looking at them, you may notice something about the word God. And if you aren't looking at it, that's fine. I will walk you through this. But first, we'll put a pause on that. And you know how I like to go on bunny trails sometimes. We'll put a pause on that. And we're going to take a little quick trip on talking about how the names of God are set up in the Bible. For those of you who are in the class downstairs, we did this a few months ago, so don't log out on me here. Or, you know, just nod knowingly that you understand that, you know, you actually remembered what we were talking about. So, this would be in the Hebrew Bible. So, if you read the name Lord, L-O-R-D, and it's in all caps, then that is the term Yahweh. They're using the word Yahweh. If you see Lord, and it's a capital L and a lowercase O-R-D, then they're using the term Adonai. Now, for God, in this case, we're seeing this, God can either be a capital G, as in the Hebrew God, or it can be God, a lowercase g, which has a whole different kind of meaning. It's the same word. So it's El or Elohim. So it would be a theme of those two. So the context of the story matters whether you capitalize the G or lowercase the G. So that's a real quick and dirty look at how, and there's a whole lot of other variations to it, but those are the three, I think, that we need to keep in mind today. So in going back to Deuteronomy, if you look in, for instance, verse 13, now, if you completely obey God's commandments, God is capital G, Elohim, so he's talking about the God, the Hebrew God. And then it keeps on going down, commands that I'm giving you right now by loving, and here it throws one, two, it gives you a double. The commands I'm giving you right now by loving the Lord your God. So Lord is all caps, and then God is capitalized, so it's not just Yahweh or Elohim, it's Yahweh Elohim. They stick them together. They'll string them along sometimes. But then further down in verse 16, It talks about, otherwise your heart might be led astray, so you stray away serving other gods, small g, plural, and worshiping them. It's still Elohim, but it's got a whole different meaning to it. So we have a big G and a little g here. And if you're hearing it, it might get a little confusing. So I just wanted to make sure that you were, you know, I'm saying God twice, but it's meaning two completely different things. So enough of that. You get this, you get that idea. So we can look at this idea of what this God, small g, in this in a couple of ways. What does this mean? What kind of small God is he? Are they talking about in this sermon that Moses is using? So first, it could represent other deities. I think it's important to recognize this, that the Hebrews accepted that other gods were recognized, had influence, and were worshipped by neighboring tribes and countries. They talk about it in the Hebrew Bible. Some are even named. You may run across, for instance, Dagon or Baal. Asherah is another one. These other gods that were around in the time, they recognized that they were there. So if you keep on looking at verse 15, it refers to the rewards of being faithful to God, capital G. So you may remember it talks about, you know, the faithfulness will bring rain, and that means good crops. It means your livestock will be healthy. What they're doing here is they're mirroring the other gods in the area. So think about this from a cultural context, because when we were reading this downstairs today, I stopped and I looked at everybody and I said, I know this is really Old Testament, because it is. We have to think of this in a cultural context. The other gods of the area, that's how they were also worshipped. If you did good, if you worshipped your God correctly, good things happened. If you didn't worship your God correctly, bad things happened. And if we had kept reading in Deuteronomy, you would have seen Moses saying that same thing. Because he's like, but watch out, if you don't do this right, the faucet's going to turn off, all these bad things are going to start happening. So this is a transactional relationship that we see come out of this first commandment within the Hebrew Bible. You may also recall in the Hebrew Bible the prophets. There's all these the different kinds of prophets. The people were scolded by these prophets for worshiping other gods. They were hedged their bets. So, okay, I'm worshiping Yahweh, and good things are happening, but you know, I really kind of want good crops this year, so maybe I'll sprinkle some love around all these other gods too around us. You know, I'm just going to do it. Let's just see what happens. I've witnessed this before. So as many of you know, I have spent some time, it's been years ago, but I spent some time in India doing various teaching, working with orphans, doing different things. And witness this firsthand in India with this idea of the multiple gods. In some places where I would take groups, they weren't exactly tourist areas. So there were no hotels. There was no place to stay. So we would typically stay in the homes of the supporters of the orphanages, the mercy homes that we were working in. They weren't necessarily Christian. In fact, most of them were not Christian. But they appreciated what these Christians were doing with taking care of orphans, taking care of children who could not be with their parents, teaching job skills to people around them. And so they monetarily supported what was going on. And they would invite us to stay in their houses. So these houses were typically, you would think of very Eastern. When you had this picture, there would be a gate. Their living quarters were downstairs. And there was a set of stairs on the outside that went to an upper room. And that was an apartment that was upstairs. And typically in those apartment area upstairs, there was a little nook in the wall. And that's where the family gods resided. So they'd have all of the gods and all the decorations, and that's where they would give their daily prayers and their offerings to their gods. The Christians there, when they would be able to, someone would accept Christ and they would become Christian. They had to do a little education with them about, you just can't take Jesus and stick it in your nook and he becomes one of all the other ones that you're worshiping. Because it was very common for that to happen. They were hedging their bets. Yeah, well, you know, I love Jesus, but you know, I've got all these other ones here too that I've been, my family's been worshiping for generations. I think there was kind of mixed success with some of that. So the other piece about these other gods, and this is kind of your nerd news for the day, is in a recent publication of the magazine Archaeology, you know, I love archaeology, there was an article published, and I think maybe I sent it to you, Evelyn, about a Jewish community that was located on an island in Egypt. So we're talking about the 8th century BCE to the 5th century BCE. It's actually during the same time that the Judah that we read about in the Old Testament, the kings of Judah, were also in power. So it matches this time frame. They found a temple, and they found some documents, some papyri, that was documenting the life of this temple. And they would be writing to their leaders in Jerusalem and telling them about what's happening. It's a fascinating story that they found. So some things that they found was their community was so intertwined with the Egyptians. So it was, I mean, they were all sit there together. And there were temple records that were showing the payments of where they were spending their money. And they found that there was small amounts of money that were going to all the other Egyptian gods that were around them. So they had a little bit over here, a little bit over here. They were hedging their bets. You know, I could think of two things. They were hedging their bets. Okay, if our God doesn't work, maybe these gods will. Or they thought of it as a community. This is, you know, we are with these people. They have other gods. We, as a community in faith, we want to also support them as well. So it was very interesting to see how they do that. Also, the records show that at one point in the 5th century, so it would have been really near the end of Jerusalem, there was an appeal from this community to Jerusalem for money to rebuild the temple. And the reason was that they had a little bit of rift with the Egyptians. Apparently, the Egyptians didn't like that they were sacrificing rams in the temple. And the Egyptians ended up tearing the temple down because of it. And so they're asking, hey, we need some money because, you know, our temple's gone. We need to rebuild this. And apparently they did. There was evidence that there was another temple there, but the documents ran out at that point. That's really all they knew. As we were talking about some of this again downstairs, Bill Hackler, in his very dubious and very smart ways, introduced us to a new word. And I told him I was going to say it because I had to write it down. And he's being bashful over there. So this word, and it's a fancy $20 word, henotheism. Evelyn's nodding her head. I didn't know about this one. So this idea of henotheism, the idea of recognizing other gods, and not necessarily worshiping them, but recognizing that they existed. And that's what we're seeing here right now. Again, it's a kind of an Old Testament look at this. So let's fast forward to the Gospels. As we've talked about, Jesus kind of upended all of these ideas. And we really should look at the Bible through a lens of the Gospels. So I'm going to be doing that now. So we fast forward to Matthew chapter 5, and I'm not going to read it. This is part of the Sermon on the Mount, or at least Matthew's version of the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus is also talking about the first commandment here. So it's Matthew chapter 5, 43 through 48. If you want to play at home, you can go up and you can read it. So Jesus is talking about the law of love, the first commandment. He says, as children of God, we should also love our enemies and pray for them. God makes the sun rise on the evil and the good, and he sends rain to both the righteous and the unrighteous. It's a whole different thought process from what we read in Deuteronomy. So since God is complete in showing love to everyone, we must do the same. This love is directed and grounded and guided in the correct way. So we can see this perhaps misguided idea of love with, if you do good things happen. If you do bad things happen. We know from experience that that's not how it works. We fast forward to Matthew and we see the just and unjust get rain. And so we should be loving everyone. So we see this progression of how we are interacting with God. Okay, so the first one was that it could mean other deities. The second way we can look at this is kind of our Western thought, our Western ideals. We take the word God less literal. And we use it as a symbol for priorities that substitute or distract from God. So can you think of any of those? This is a spoiler alert. There's a lot of those. There's lots and lots of those. We actually cut off our conversation downstairs because there was just so many of them. We disagreed that pretty much everything that becomes a strict priority for us that upends anything about our love can cause this. So, you know, money is another one. The power. There's many, you know, you've probably got many, many others that you could think of. What's that? Super Bowl Sunday. Well, yeah, I wasn't going to go there, but fly, go fly. But this leads us really into our second text. So we're going to be moving into 1 John, and it's chapter 2, verses 15 through 17. So we go all the way in the back. And these are very short books here that if you go fast, you'll fly right by them and you're into Revelation. So if you get to Revelation, stop and go backwards and you'll find John. So we're in John chapter 2. And I'll be reading again from verse 15 through 17. Now, a little bit about 1 John. So you kind of know where I'm talking about here. So 1 John, there's a 2 John and there's a 3 John. They are letters or sermons that came out of the churches and followers of the Apostle John. So 1 John is encouraging a church, or maybe several churches, after a split in their community. So John Wesley, the founder of Methodism, as we follow much of his theology, he used 1 John a lot in his sermons. You will see it coming up all the time. So let me read this passage out of 1 John, again, chapter 2, verses 15 through 17. Don't love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in them. Everything that is in the world, the craving for whatever the body feels, the craving for whatever the eyes see, and the arrogant pride in one's possessions is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world and its cravings are passing away, but the person who does the will of God remains forever. Wow. There's a lot there. I mean, that can really hit you between the eyes, for sure. So this is a warning about worldliness. Cheers. Hold on. This is a warning about worldliness. Now, to be clear, we're not talking about the world. We're not talking about the physical world here. We're talking about worldliness within our lives. In the past, actually in the present as well, some of our Christian brothers and sisters have used this text more in a Puritan way to abolish things that they don't like, that they think are worldly. So, you know, Evelyn, we can't dance. We can't play cards. We can't go to movies. They use this in a very narrow perspective. And I think that's that's incorrect. That's an incorrect use of what this is meaning. I think it's talking about desire and direction. So we should have a will that desires to believe and obey God and resist the temptation of the world to pursue anything that stands between you and God and you and your neighbor. We as humans, we should have healthy passions. We should have healthy interests that we pursue. It's part of who we are. It's part of what makes us a healthy human being. But we trip up when those interests and their passions take the place of a healthy relationship between God and neighbor. And that's where we run into a problem. Have your interests, have your passions, that, you know, what that drives you, but don't let it get in the way of loving God and loving your neighbor. Y'all may know, some of you may know Adam Hamilton, or have seen that, you probably don't know him, but you may have seen him in the past. He is a United Methodist pastor. He's the pastor of the Church of the Resurrection in Kansas, in the Kansas City, Kansas area. We use a lot of his material. He is now probably one of the leading pastors within United Methodism now. If you look at his social media feed, you'll realize very quickly he's a huge fan of the Kansas City Chiefs. And he's probably having a pretty good day right now. Depending on the outcome of the game, he will not be having a very good day at the end. We'll see. But he posts pictures about the 10 in the games. He includes shots of himself, his family, his friends at the games. Sometimes he even preaches sermons, and this would be more in their contemporary services. Sometimes he even preaches sermons, and he's got a Kansas City Chiefs jersey on. I don't know if you've ever seen those. I wonder how much pushback he gets wearing a Kansas City jersey. You know, maybe, because I'm guessing he's maybe going to a game afterwards, or, you know, he's going to a watch party. I don't know, but he does wear those. I would not accuse Adam Hamilton of having an obsession that takes away from his love of God and love of neighbor because he loves the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think that's something to keep in mind, is that you can have those passions, and I think he does, but it does not overshadow really what he does. So when I mentioned that John Wesley used 1 John a lot. So when he did it, it involved around the concept of self-denial. And this is one of the places I want to kind of land today. It's a core term. It's a Wesleyan. We go back into Wesleyan theology. Self-denial is a core term of the doctrine. So this is kind of, again, what I'm kind of rambling about today is moderation. So we need healthy pursuits, ambitions, and passions, but don't let them replace or eclipse loving God and loving neighbor. That was what John Wesley was trying to get across. So what do I want you to take away from today? So if you haven't been listening, that's okay. Kind of lock in on me. I'm going to give you a list. Here's some things I want you to remember about what I was talking about today. So we've been talking about misplaced love and loyalty. Misdirected means it may have started out in the right track, but somewhere it got in the wrong direction. It was radicalized. Something went wrong with it. Misordered love is an interest or passion that takes over for God and neighbor. It becomes a singular obsession. The two passages today have very similar but very different teachings. The Deuteronomy passage shows us the harm of putting other gods, literal or otherwise, in place or alongside the worship of the true God. The 1 John passage teaches self-denial. We need healthy interests and ambitions, but they should not become so out of proportion that they eclipse God and neighbor. John Wesley taught moderation, a concept that seems distant in this polarized world today, but I encourage us to capture that idea again. The proper redirection is taught by Jesus in Matthew 5. Since God brings good things to everyone, just and unjust, we should do the same. Love of God and love of neighbor are primary. So we have one more thing to do, and I left my, there it is, that's my bulletin. So each week we have been giving you a love in action, and it's in your bulletin. And so I want to end with reminding you and showing you this love in action and encouraging you to do this this week. Reflect on your weekly routine and identify one activity or possession that may compete with your devotion to God. Set aside time to dedicate that area to prayer or service. That one hits kind of hard. I'll speak for myself. That one hits kind of hard. It may hit for you all too. But I encourage you to give it a try. You got to start somewhere, and I'm going to start somewhere too. So, and next week, I'd like to hear if you're able to accomplish this, and I'll let you know if I fell on my face too. So, thank you. Amen.